Hello folks, welcome back, and if you're a new listener, welcome to the show. I'm your host Simon Ward, and you're listening to the High Performance Human Podcast. Now you might not realise it, but you are a high performance human. It isn't just about your fitness level and your race results, it's not even how you compare with all of those other endurance athletes which you race against. Being a high performance human is about your whole life performance, sleep, nutrition, exercise, relationships, mental health. And you don't have to be a high-level athlete to excel at any or all of these. And we appreciate that you might still have a bit of room for improvement. And if that's the case, then we would love to help you. I'm currently available to take on a couple of clients. And my wife, Beth, who is a certified life coach, also has availability. So depending on what you're looking to focus on, we have you covered. And you can find contact details in the show notes. Have you ever become so focused on losing weight for your main event to improve sports performance that you've ended up actually harming your health? If you have, you might be relieved to know that this isn't uncommon. I've had several conversations on this podcast with elite female athletes who've suffered from what used to be known as the female athlete triad. In more recent years, this has been reframed as relative energy deficiency in sport, or Red S. I even chatted with the founder of the Red S project, Pippa Wolven, herself a former elite runner and sufferer of this particular issue. What's probably not as well recognised, although the change of title did seek to reflect this, is that male athletes can also suffer from Red S as well. And what's more, this is not exclusive to elite athletes. Today's podcast guest, Alex Bendatelli, recovered from Red S 2 years ago, and he shares his story with us as we discuss how reading one book set him on a downward spiral and another one actually started to rescue him. We also talk about the mistaken belief that being lighter means better performance, body image and the impact of the media, why sustainable performance is a much better goal to have, and what signs to look for and how you might be able to help someone if you think they're struggling with Red S. So let's crack on and chat with Alex. Welcome to the show, Alex. It's lovely to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, now, as I said in the intro, you were introduced to me by Pippa Wolven from Red S. I did a podcast with Pippa maybe 18 months ago, and I felt like this is a topic that we have, Red S, that is, that we've talked about several times with female athletes, and I think a lot of the time we think from what we read in the popular press that this is purely a female issue. But one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on is for two reasons. Firstly, to show people that it's not exclusive to females. And also, as you pointed out in our pre-chat, it's not also exclusive to elite athletes. You're going to share with us your story. And from that, people will get a feeling that you weren't an elite athlete. You're a recreational, like probably most of our listeners, and this is something it's universal, but perhaps not widely recognised. So I appreciate you being on here to share your story. So why don't we start with you just telling us how you came to be an ambassador for Red S, and we'll sort of get onto that at the end. But what's your story, and how did you end up in the situation?
Yeah, sure. I'm an ambassador and a mentor for Project Red S. And for those who don't know, Red S stands for Relative Energy Deficiency in Sport, which is essentially a health condition which can be very debilitating to multiple areas of the body. It can be the cardiovascular system, the hormonal system, bone health, so on and so on. As Simon mentioned, I'm a recreational athlete at club level. So for myself, I've never competed at a high level of sport, but I did find myself running into a bit of issues with the issues of Red S. I reached out to Project Red S kind of at first hand. It's quite a long-winded sort of explanation to get to the point. To get to the point where I kind of wanted to reach out, I discovered Project Red S myself through a separate podcast. Pippa was speaking on, I believe it was either Runner's World, or there was a separate one as well. But once I heard Pippa speaking on that topic, and I'd also read a separate book myself as well, it was More Fuel You by Renny McGregor. So this was all to do with fueling in sport and how we shouldn't see our bodies as an opportunity to be as light as possible, to be as lean as possible. And instead, we should focus on how can we fuel our bodies for performance. So as I'm sort of piecing together, once I kind of myself was running into a bit of trouble, I started to realize, you know, perhaps this is a condition that I might be suffering from myself. As I started to reflect back, you know, over the months and realizing that I was kind of encountering different issues, a lot of kind of hormonal issues, a lot of the kind of female problems are attributed to a loss of period or the amenorrhea, but males can kind of have issues themselves. So
hormonal... just jump in there, Alex, because before this whole syndrome, if you like, was renamed as Red S, it was known as the female athlete triad. And I think when I started coaching, we understood about loss of periods, so amenorrhea, body composition loss, and bone density, so osteopenia, osteoporosis. And that was that triangle that they referred to, the female athlete triad. And that obviously gave people the impression that it was exclusive to females, which is where we started at a few moments ago. And so Red S was a wider recognition of the fact that it was much broader than that, right?
Yeah. So I guess the biggest challenge for myself was originally not knowing what the condition was. And I've studied a master's degree in sports and exercise medicine as well. So I was very aware of the topic of Red S, or previously called the female athlete triad. And yeah, at one point you are educated to think it's more exclusive towards females, but as I very much kind of learned myself, you know, it's not. And one of the inside of the More Fuel You book, which is the one thing that I read, there was actually a list of symptoms exclusive to males as well. Mm-hmm. And this was underlining the kind of hormonal difficulties that males can have as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which very much highlighted it's not just characterized by the loss of period.
So I'm interested to, if we probably need to rewind a little bit, to how you came to be thinking there might be something wrong with you. You know, because I understood from our previous discussions that you perhaps weren't always somebody who might have been veering towards these states or this condition. So perhaps you can just give us a recap on what you were doing as an athlete, as a recreational athlete, and then the sort of long path that you said led to being there.
Yeah, that's with the initial question, I guess I was trying to think about the best way I can introduce the best way to rewind all the way back to that point. But yeah, I think for me, I've always been quite keen on training, keen on health and fitness. A while ago, it used to be combat sports, so I was quite keen on martial arts and boxing. And then a few years ago, I kind of discovered running. I was doing it kind of simultaneously. You see it a lot now where, a kind of high frequency of sport or many different types of sports or volumes of sports is encouraged quite a lot, whether it's CrossFit and running or weightlifting and running. There's quite an obvious trend with this kind of hybrid approach. And reflecting back, I guess I was kind of doing that in some form of way. But it was only when I started to pursue running more seriously, or at least relatively seriously to myself, I started to increase my volume, increase my intensity. And when I recall sort of the biggest kind of change for me was when I read about a book, which was it was called The Paleo Diet for Athletes. This was a book that I'd heard about from a YouTube video, and then I went and bought the book myself. And I read this book, and it was all about it was in principle low carbohydrate, high protein, and it related to foods that are non-processed and they can only be basically eaten at certain times. It was a very restrictive way of eating. So no dairy. The carbohydrates had to be fibrous most of the time unless you trained. And I read the book, and because of my, I would say, you know, perhaps addictive personality, I tried to kind of carry it out to an absolute T. And in the initial phase alongside my training, I think there was a slight, you know, period of time where I felt better. I felt lighter. I lost a little bit of body fat. I was perhaps performing a bit better. But then I guess it all became a bit of a mirage. Months and months later, I just kind of recall waking up most days and feeling really low mood, feeling quite depressed, and just, again, not really being able to put my finger on what was wrong, feeling almost like you're just the kind of passenger in a way to your own life. And you kind of, I think a mirage is like a really good way to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your energy levels are so low, your muscles are really sore all the time. The minute you step out of bed, you feel your legs are like, you know, you feel like you've perhaps gone to the gym and lifted extremely heavy. Your legs are just not able to recover, and your energy systems are the same as well. You just feel exhausted.
Quick question there, Alex, then. From the point when you took up running to this point now where you're noticing that you're waking up with low energy and, not particularly good mood and sore muscles, how long did that take, do you think?
Oh, good question. I think probably about, I would say it was probably underlying for a long time, perhaps longer than I can recall. But I would say in terms of the actual debilitating feelings, it was probably about a year. But when you're going to get to the point where you feel like something is quite seriously wrong and you're no longer able to recover or respond to your training stimulus anymore, you almost feel like you've kind of got lost somewhere along the journey. And at the point where things are kind of at rock bottom, you know, that it's easy to see why someone would not immediately identify with the issues until something is quite debilitating.
Yeah, because one of the things I've recognized as a coach, for instance, is that I've worked with a lot of people, recreational people who are doing Ironman. And you quite rightly mentioned there this hybrid approach. You know, there's a percentage of those people also like to be doing CrossFit. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's, if you're doing a workout of the day, that's quite high intensity, isn't it? There's a, might not last very long, but there's an awful lot of calories burned and energy used to get through those sessions. And then you're going out riding your bike for a couple of hours or running home from work. And so I'll talk to people and they'll say, oh yeah, my legs are really sore. But that's what's supposed to happen, right? That means I'm doing the right thing, training, you know, I'm supposed to feel tired all the time. And actually that's not right. You yes, of course you will feel fatigued, but if you're feeling tired all the time and your muscles are sore all the time, you've gone a bit too much the other way.
Yeah, I think that whole kind of concept really epitomizes the problem with Red S, because you forget where the line is of feeling normal and feeling in the state of energy deficit. And in the state of energy deficit, you become, you kind of lose touch with your body signals. You get slightly confused as to whether your legs are sore because you've been training or you're just not recovering properly. And this leads back to one of the biggest psychological issues with the condition is, if you're quite mentally resilient and perhaps you've been through certain things in your life that makes you mentally resilient, and sport and exercise is your outlet, it is extremely, extremely hard to recognize when you have a problem, because sport will continue to be that outlet in the day that makes your life slightly better. So having to realize that the thing that you love is actually the thing causing the problem, is a quite a really, you know, that's a very, very difficult thing. And Pippa speaks about this as well. You know, she was performing at elite level, but for me at recreational level, you know, exercise being something that gives me purpose, something that gives me fulfillment, and having to realize, you know, this is actually causing me a problem here. This is doing me damage.
Yeah. What you've just said there, Ashley, causes me to think about my first Ironman, which was almost 30 years ago. And I was training for Ironman Canada in the summer of 1995, the late summer. So I had all of those long summer days to train. And I had a personal training business as well. So I didn't work out alongside clients, but I used to work out in the gym. I remember coming back from a run. I'd pop into the paper shop in the morning or you know, after training or on the way back from swimming or on the way back from a run and get some water. And thinking how sore my legs were driving there and having to go to the shop and getting out of the car and thinking, oh, my legs hurt. And then exactly what we were just talking about, thinking, well, I'm training for an Ironman. What do I expect? Right? I have to do the 2 hours of training every day and a big, big volume of riding at the weekend. And going to, and this is, I'd like to come on to, this is something I wanted to ask you later, but going over to my mum's house for dinner on a Sunday night and my mum saying, oh, is everything all right? You look like you're losing weight. And I said, yeah, mum, I'm in great shape. I'm doing my Ironman. I need to be really lean. The lighter you are, the faster you go, right?
Yeah.
And thinking that that was a badge of honor that my mum said I was looking really lean and a bit unhealthy. And then I remember a few years later that I'd had an operation. I hadn't been able to train for a couple of months and going on holiday and putting some weight on. And my mum said, oh, you're very healthy now. And saying, yeah, I'm 5 kilos overweight now, mum. You know, and that mismatch in my brain with the things that other people were noticing and what I thought was good and what they thought was healthy is behavior patterns that I've observed as a coach and probably what you probably say you can probably share similar experience, right?
Yeah, for sure. As I mentioned at the beginning, being an ambassador and mentor for Project Red S, this is part of the challenge that we face is what is it ingrained, you know, what is the kind of psychological variable involved when people do have this preconceived belief that leaner is a desire, you know. The only way we can be satisfied is if perhaps we have a six pack, or, you know, why is this concept of performance sometimes based around being leaner and looking more athletic? I think to answer it simply, you know, you look at the elite athletes, some of these guys are, you know, they're elite athletes for a reason, but some of them hold a lot of muscle mass and they hold a very low body fat percentage. So in our heads, we think, you know, this is a picture of what we should look like, or this is a picture of what we could look like. But in reality, we're all so, so different. And you don't quite know what exactly your body should look like based on your sport. And for example, if you're a swimmer or if you're a runner or if you're a cyclist, there's a lot of stereotypes as to what each sport should look like. But as a recreational athlete in particular, what we want to try and spread the message of is that this should not be a body type or a body image. We want people to focus on fueling and, you know, fueling their body for the sport to give them the energy to feel amazing performing the sport. And all of the aesthetic side of things and, you know, the preconceived notions such as, yeah, somebody in your family might say to you, you're looking a little bit leaner, and, you know, that might give you that kind of short-term gratification, but in the long term, you probably know it's not quite right.
I think there's a few things there, isn't there? In terms of the elite athletes, we tend to see them, unless you regularly watch those particular sports, most of the time, the average person will be watching when those events are at their peak for the year, the Olympic Games, the World Championships. So you see athletes who have got into prime condition for that one event.
Yep.
But if you saw those elite athletes at a lot of the other time throughout the year, they're not, you know, some people are naturally leaner and some people have that sort of also that vanity that makes them want to stay that lean. But most of the elite athletes I know gain kilos during the winter, during the off season, partly because they're not training as hard, but also because they know that having a little bit more weight improves cellular health and deep cellular recovery and all of those things. I think the media you know, don't help. I think a lot, if you look at a lot of the elite fitness magazines or the recreational fitness magazines, the cover models have always got six packs. And even people like David Gandy, who's the male model that you see on the billboards for the underpants, he'll say that I don't look like that most of the year. And most of those photos are airbrushed to make me look leaner than I am. Right. And that's, but we get the impression that that's how we're supposed to look. And that's what the ideal is. And so we're sort of brainwashed a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think like this, just relating back to the kind of topic on the whole, for myself, after I read the Paleo Diet for Athletes, and I actually lost a bit of body fat myself. And for the first time in my life, I was seeing myself as more, you know, being leaner. And I guess in my mind, I was enjoying it. And I at least thought, you know, this is what I've always meant to be like, or this is perhaps what, you know, when you're performing well, this is what you should look like. So this, the sad story is that you learn through the university of life in a way. And through my own downfall over time, you realize lighter and leaner is very short term. The reason that these elite athletes are able to perform at the highest level is because they have people taking care of them. They have supervision all of the time. They have people telling them exactly what they need to eat, exactly how they need to train, exactly how they need to recover. And I don't have that. And most people at a recreational level don't have that. So there really needs to be a greater understanding of where we're at with everything right now.
And I think it's important to point out also, Alex, that even though those athletes do have support services, they still, some of them still get it wrong. And there are examples of athletes and ambassadors for Red S who were elite athletes who will openly say, you know, my career and my health was wrecked by an overfocus on this. And, you know, I was a champion at this one year, and the next year I was retiring because I kept getting stress fractures in my lower limb and I couldn't race. I mean, Pippa will talk openly, and she did so on my podcast, and probably what you also heard, that saying she was in a collegiate running program at a high level with a group of other girls, and that, not intensity, but there was quite a toxic atmosphere of everybody focusing on weight and people saying things like, oh, leaner's faster, right? Lighter's faster. Yeah. So, you know, you start to believe that after a while.
Yeah. Pippa mentioned as well, you know, like her coach handed her a book related to race weight, and there's a, you know, there's a preconceived idea within coaching systems. And I guess for me, I can't speak about it in a lot of depth, but this is very clear that there's an old school mentality of lighter is better. And it does have a knock on effect down to the recreational level. And I see it as well, you know, based around participating in races around Scotland myself, as a club runner. The scary thing is you can kind of see signs when people are, you know, racing severely underweight, and a lot of them are quite young athletes as well. And it feels like a ticking time bomb.
I'm glad you mentioned that book, Race Weight, because I was chatting with my wife about this, about this whole notion of race weight. And I have the conversation with a lot of people saying, oh, I need to get into race weight now. And I've used that myself. I'm not going to say I'm perfect. I've used that myself as a coach and personally in previous years. And I'm wondering if we need to have a reframe of that word, because I think it gives the wrong implications of what we should be aiming at, which is relevant to this conversation. You know, yes, sure, race weight is the weight that you race best at, but it shouldn't be a target. You know, there are so many other things that we need to have. Like, nobody ever talks about, what's my race sleep? What's the ideal amount of sleep I need to have in the months before racing? What's the amount, what are my race foods? You know, what's the amount of calories or foodstuffs that I need to ingest? How many portions of vegetables do I need to have each week or each day? But we talk about race weight, and then it becomes a primary focus of, right, there's a number on the scales. And we know that that number anyway is transient throughout the day, don't we? You know, so it could go up and down by a couple of kilos, and if you dehydrate or anything. So I'm wondering if folks like us, and certainly coaches and the people who write in the media, should be using a different terminology when we're talking about competition, and maybe even ignoring the whole conversation around weight.
Yeah, I think that one thing that we want to kind of highlight at the project as well is who are the people or who are the athletes that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. If you have a particularly sensitive group of athletes, and when I use the word sensitive, I mean perhaps a group of athletes who have experienced a disordered way of eating, which has led to being in an energy deficit or being subject to red S, and therefore the words weight, race weight, you know, focusing on the small variables like numbers, whether it's numbers of calories, numbers on the scales, numbers of carbohydrates, perhaps, you know, the right thing to do is strive in a direction where, yeah, we say this isn't relevant. At least I can speak for that on a recreational level. The one thing that I love about the project is as soon as you go on the website, it says a club for sustainable performance. And sustainability to me brings up a few different words. I think about fueling and enjoyment. No process is sustainable unless it's enjoyable. And for me, if I was to get close to a recreational race and I started to think about race weight, and that wouldn't tie in with enjoyment for me.
Yeah, I love that. A club for sustainable performance, because that brings in so many other factors, doesn't it? Yeah, because if you're not eating properly, that can compromise your immune system. And yeah, a weaker immune system means you're more likely to get ill or you're more likely to get injured. And you know, most athletes know that when they're injured or ill, the training's restricted in some way. So that doesn't play towards the consistency, which all the coaches talk about. So if we want, and this is a big thing of mine now, is I talk about great health leads to great performance. So if athletes focus on being their healthiest first, they're nearly always going to get a better performance at the end of the day than if they focus on performance first and health second.
Yeah, 100%. One of my other roles is a sports scientist for a female football academy, where I'm dealing with athletes aged 10 to 19. And the first thought on my mind when I'm coaching the first kind of initial phase of a session is enjoyment. Can I get a smile on their faces? You know, playing football from 14 years old, if they're striving to play it into their 20s, what's going to get them to that point? Is it going to be hammering performance and trying to make them feel guilty about the outcomes? Or is it going to be, again, sustainable performance? Can we allow them to enjoy it? Can we get them to invest in the process?
Yeah, and I'm 60 now, and I think that's also important for older athletes, is what are we going to do now that's going to enable us to, if you love sport, and you talked about it there being about an important part of your life, and if it's always been an important part of your life, what are you going to do with your life habits that's going to enable you to continue enjoying being active into your 70s and older? Because, you know, nobody likes being told, well, you can't run anymore, or well, you probably shouldn't do any of this vigorous exercise because, you know, your bones are up to it, or this and that and the other. I think it's a lifelong thing. But back to your point about which type of athletes are you working with? Obviously, there's the ones who've had issues before, but there's also groups of athletes that we know that are particularly sensitive in terms of what they're receptive to, the messages. They're quite easily influenced, you know, growing teenagers, you know, people who are just, I don't know, they're just more easily influenced, and probably by the wrong types of influencers. So we need to be very careful about the wording we use and the messages that we use as coaches and parents and teachers.
Yeah, I think I'm quite grateful that I'm probably quite a mentally resilient person through my life experiences. So I you know, part of my recovery has involved taking insight into my own thought processes, what's brought me to this point, and how can I see it and observe it and not be involved in it. You know, as a coach yourself, you probably see when athletes are performing their best, it's probably when they're not paying too much attention to the day by day and they're just ticking over and enjoying it. And again, it ties back in with, like, are you going to be the coach that coaches the athletes on the small details? to the point where, you know, you're making them perfectionists. Uh-huh. And again, it might lead us into another topic, but I think perfectionism can be a lot of the problem with these sort of issues in the first place. Is you want to feel like you're getting everything right.
I hope you're enjoying the show so far and learning a lot. If you aren't already a regular listener, I hope you feel you might come back. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so you know whenever a new episode arrives. I publish these twice a week, ad-free, and with the mission of improving the health and performance of endurance athletes around the world. And to help me, I'd love it if you could share the episode with one person you think could benefit. If you have a couple more minutes, perhaps you could leave me a review on your chosen platform once you've finished listening to this episode. Okay, let's get back to the show. Yes, I think you're right about the perfectionism thing. And I think there are a lot of elite athletes that are like that, whether it's just attention to detail, whether it's, you know, going the extra mile or two on practice, you know, staying out until the floodlights give way to kick balls, you know, whatever, to just master the process as best they can. You know, those behavior patterns can be, and traits can be quite destructive, but if harnessed the right way, they can also be quite profitable. And it's getting that balance. But I think that as a coach, then knowing that somebody has those perfectionist tendencies is also a vulnerable group, isn't it? Because if you're giving them the wrong messages, they can be, you know, that confirmation bias is, oh, this is something I need to focus on.
Yeah, I think, like you say, it can be the kind of master of your own downfall in a way, where the perfectionist tendencies that make you a really good athlete, or at least allow you to identify with elite tendencies, might be the same perfectionist tendencies that lead you into the restrictive behavior in the first place. My experience with Red S was a restrictive, it was a restrictive form of eating to try and make myself become leaner. But certainly people can suffer unintentionally as well, which again is probably a topic of conversation. But Red S can be a product of intentional or unintentional calorie deficit, or energy deficit is probably to put it.
I don't know if you've ever read the book by Tyler Hamilton. So he was one of the crew that was around at the same time as Lance Armstrong and had been busted for doping. In his book, he talks about working with the scientist Ferrari, and Ferrari coming around to his house and go, all he would say to him was, Tyler, watts per kilos, watts per kilos, you know, as this whole thing you had to focus on. And they had this magic number of 6.3 or 6.4 that was what they needed for the functional threshold power. And they would go to some ridiculous lengths, really, you know, drinking sparkling mineral water to make them feel full of gas so that they lost their appetite when it came around to dinner time, drinking more coffee to suppress their appetite, you know, definitely not healthy behaviors, but neither is taking drugs. So, but if you're reading that book and you're impressionable, you're thinking, oh, this watts per kilo thing, and you read about that. And so whether that's an intentional message is from the sports publications or from coaches or athletes talking about watts per kilo, you know, there are two elements to that. There's your weight and there's your power.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know, it's difficult to increase power a lot in a short space of time, but you can definitely drop your weight if that's your focus. Very interestingly, I was listening to a podcast with the Norwegian physiologist and coach for Christian Blumenfeld and Gustav Iden, the Norwegian triathletes. And somebody asked him about absolute and relative VO2 max. And they talk about, well, surely if you're coming into a race, if an athlete lowers their weight, then their relative figure will go up. And he said, well, we used to think that. But now we're finding evidence that that's not the case, that if you lose weight, your VO2 max come down, absolute and relative, and so therefore performance declines. Now, if that message gets out to people that this holy grail that we're searching for isn't actually as productive as we think, that could also change behavior patterns.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting when you talk about the power to weight ratio in cycling, because there's actually an article on... We have it on the Project Red S website, and it's related to one of the athletes in the Tour de France. I think he's Lotto Destiny, perhaps. But he talks about his experiences with Red S as a professional cyclist, and he actually speaks about how he manipulated the equation the other way around. So he gained, I think he gained 20 kilograms or something crazy. And he took his time trial wattage from 900 watts to one and a half thousand or 1,200 or something. So yeah, just, you know, science is always evolving, and, you know, everyone once thought the VO2 max is the most important part of performance, and now everyone's on the lactate threshold bandwagon. What we might see is that coaches, hopefully, and researchers start to discover perhaps and put more emphasis on, yes, we can spend very, very small times in the year in an energy deficit under supervision as an elite athlete, but perhaps for the recreational athlete, we should just strive to be in a sustainable calorie maintenance or calorie surplus all year round. And therefore we're more likely to live a healthy lifestyle, not get injured, not be ill. And for me, you know, that's how you continue to enjoy your sport is all of the above.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're a triathlete, I get that power to weight might be important on the bike, although per that, you know, discussion with the Norwegian physiologist, maybe things aren't quite as clear cut. I get that you can maybe run a bit faster if you're lighter, but also being too light and too lean is a definite weakness for swimming in cold water. And you know, when you're doing a race which for the recreational athlete is going to take you 10 or 12 hours if you're doing an Ironman, you also need the energy to sustain your body throughout the training and recover, and to sustain you through that race. So yeah, again, this could be a negative thing. You know, it's not always clear cut, it's nuanced. And I think there's a tendency to focus on things that we believe are right and ignore other things that perhaps could prove to be more significant.
Yeah, I think, again, part of the mission that we have is how can we change people's approach and mindset and mentality into, you know, wanting to be strong and being able to produce force, being able to feel good and recover well. These things are a lot harder if we are restrictive and if we, you know, find ourselves in a calorie deficit for many reasons. So yeah, I think it's really important. I lost my train of thought there.
That's all right. Maybe let's change tack a little bit. Maybe that will come back to you. We talked a little bit about comments that you and I both experienced from family members that might have indicated there was a problem, and then just dismissing them as, well, that's great, then I must be doing well. But thinking back to that time when you were, you know, those 12 months when you were getting more invested in running faster and maybe not eating enough, are there things that your family could have said to you or not said to you that might have helped you identify the situation earlier or react to it earlier, do you think?
I think for me, as someone who's always been involved in sport and health and fitness, at least from being kind of 18, 19, there was a big part of where your family just kind of trust that you know what you're doing. So perhaps they don't want to intervene, because again, it comes down to these preconceived notions of, okay, he's doing more running, he's running more, he's exercising more, and he's leaner and he's lighter. So that's the, you know, that equation kind of adds up in the head. I definitely think when I was towards the, you know, the lower end of the scales in terms of how I felt and in terms of my actual weight, they were definitely kind of noticing it more and mentioning it. It was a real challenge for me, because prior to being a runner, I was involved in martial arts and I was involved in more power-based sports. So I always carried a decent bit of lean muscle mass. And hearing comments from other people about, you know, you've lost a lot of weight, and there is that part of your mind that's identified with perhaps being relatively athletic, and then suddenly it's all kind of gone away. So it was a real it was a real challenge for me to get my head around and kind of accept where I was and how serious it kind of became.
I'm just thinking also, you know, we talked about the media and the influence that can have. If you go on to Instagram and look at some of the athletes that are on there, not necessarily elite athletes, but recreation athletes, that certainly in terms of CrossFit or some of those, or even the runners, a lot of them are super muscular or muscular looking and lean. And they're the ones that have got the most followers, you know. And yes, they're gymnastic and athletic and they're doing some amazing routines. But I think also there's a certain amount of voyeurism and people are like looking at those bodies. You don't often see somebody who is a healthy looking and perhaps not as lean that's got lots of followers and people going, ah, look at them. But actually, they would probably be a better role model and more like normality.
Yeah. You know, the people that make money from these things, you know, it's, I guess they're kind of a very small percentage of people who can, you know, it appears that year round they look that way, or there's definitely a big kind of trend on social media at the moment about, you know, athleticism and the sport of high rocks has kind of came out of nowhere, and it's all big muscly guys and big muscly females running around with they're topped off, and it's almost that kind of gladiator-like mentality. Mm-hmm. And perhaps we've evolved to, you know, desire to look a certain way. I think one powerful thing that could come of the project is creating a space for people to feel and understand like they're part of a club where these things aren't important. And this is one thing that I've discussed with Pippa as well is, you know, can we create a club where people feel like they're in a space where they've had problems or they have problems with the kind of fueling issues, but they're in a kind of safe grounds, just in the same way as that you would go to a running club and feel part of it. It's part of a community, and you know, same with any club, whether it's triathlon or weightlifting or any sort of.
What's really interesting is I've started working with an athlete who does Ironman. He's in his early 50s. I spoke with him on the podcast a few weeks ago. His name's Matt Spooner. And he actually said to me in the podcast, he gets imposter syndrome at times because he'll say, if you look at me in the photos, I'm not super lean. And yet I'm racing 9 hours and 11 for an Ironman distance. Man, that's incredibly fast for anybody at any age. But for a 50-year-old, that is super fast. But Matt feels like he doesn't fit into what most people would say is the norm for super fast athletes like that. And he's a well put together guy mentally. You know, he seems very resilient and very smart and sensible. And yet he still feels like that's a sort of maybe a thought that's going through other people's minds. He's like, how do you go so fast?
Yeah.
But it's about what he does, not what he looks like he can do. He will be a much more of an appropriate role model for that, you know, top performance ultra distance racing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we can get more role models like that in the kind of limelight as much as perhaps not, you know, perhaps some more unhealthy role models, then I think that can make a big difference because, a lot of it is related to education. You know, how can we educate people to realize that correct fueling and correct nutrition is the most important factor for performance output? And it ties in with life as well. So me myself, based in Glasgow, but Monday nights I work through in Edinburgh, so there's an element of travel. I work 3 hours in a kind of S&C/ pitch-based setup with an academy, and afterwards I'll travel back. Throughout the week, I work in the shop. I'm on my feet all day at a kind of specialist running store. And besides that, I'm trying to fit my own training in as well. So it's trying to understand the amount of food intake that we actually might require. And if you're somebody, again, if you're an athlete who doesn't want to focus on the numbers, you know, you don't want to be the person who has to deal with that, then how can we do it otherwise?
I think Pippa raised this point when she and I were talking on the podcast, that some of the problem for her wasn't that she was deliberately trying to undereat. It was that she had so much going on in her life with the studying and travel, and she was living in a foreign country. You know, so it's a different, you know, even though the being in the US and the UK are very similar, it's still a different culture. And so, and different types of foods and everything that goes on around that. And she said there were just times when she just wasn't eating enough, almost like she was forgetting to eat enough. But so back to what you were saying, you know, it's, I have to go from here to here and I've only got a few minutes and we're discouraged from eating this in class. And so I don't eat then. And then I've got to get from here to that. And it's difficult to get anything more than the snacking. And by the end of the day, if you've been running twice, you suddenly realize that you're 500 calories down, and that soon adds up.
Yeah. And the challenge is, if you are someone who wants to fuel and eat intuitively, like myself, so I don't track calories or numbers or anything like that, you have to kind of rely on yourself and your body signals, you know, feelings of hunger. But perhaps if we all were to track calories and track numbers, we would be quite astonished at, you know, how many of us are perhaps in a deficit, and, you know, that those extra few thousand steps that you make whilst you're walking to work or back from work is adding up in the day. And maybe it's a cereal bar or a couple of slices of toast at night that you haven't, you know, thought about checking off. And across the course of the week, it adds up. And then the course of the month and in the year as well.
How long ago is it, Alex, when you were self-diagnosed with Red S?
Oh, I would probably say, so I'm trying to think, it was back in 2023, the summer of 2023.
Okay, so you're about 12 months past that now, right? Well, not quite 12 months, almost 12 months past that, yeah?
Yeah, wait, excuse me, sorry, the summer of 2022.
Right, yeah. So you're 2 years past that now.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's a part of your life that you've left behind, or do you always have to be mindful about what you're doing to make sure you don't end up back there again?
Yeah, good question. I think part of this comes down to, you know, the kind of the day by day. I'm very much trust that I've, you know, recovered, self-recovered, and, you know, the kind of different methods that I've put in place. Originally, it was reducing my training volume and massively increasing my energy intake. But to answer the other part of the question, whether it's something that you leave behind, I don't believe that you can always leave these things entirely behind, because the tendencies that were once there and the tendencies that are deeply, you know, perhaps psychological, and you, unless you're, sometimes it comes down to accepting that you perhaps might not know the answer to the question, whether it's, you know, have I ate enough today? But you've tried your very best to do so, and you know you're full. You know, if you continue to eat that, it's becoming the other route where you're becoming unhealthy. You're perhaps overeating. But I think with like a physical, you know, if you have a physical injury, you might have a scar at the end of it. And I think for me, it's about appreciating how far I've came. You know, perhaps the worry sometimes of am I doing enough or am I feeling well enough? That's pretty normal to have, I think, with something so debilitating. I think part of the mentoring role that I have now is helping other athletes who are suffering understand their thought processes and understanding that this isn't something that we should strive to completely. Whilst you need to recover, a lot of it is understanding how these thought processes have become ingrained in your head, and there's definitely a huge element of psychology involved, for sure.
So I think one of the difficulties with something like this is, if you're a coach, if you're a parent, if you're a training partner, if you're a life partner, is spotting the signs. So you've identified some of the signs that you were noticing, but also, you know, how do you say something and when do you say something? and what do you say? You know, how do you and where do you refer people to? Because I think part of the time is people don't do anything because they just don't know what to do. So it's easy to let it slide and hope somebody else picks up the baton rather than having to take action yourself. Because that can seem like a bit of creating a bit of a conflict, can't it? And we know a lot of people don't like to have conflicts in their life.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that I wanted to speak on the podcast in kind of overall is because for me it was kind of maybe I didn't know that something was wrong for a long time, because I just accepted that as somebody who exercises often, as somebody who has a high level of discipline, you know, it is normal for me to be tired, it is normal for me to have a low mood, it is normal for me to be hungry all the time. And you just kind of put it under the carpet because you're like, well, you know, I'm in the small percentage of people in the world who do a lot of exercise and who do try. And I think I would like to encourage those people to challenge their ideas and, you know, perhaps read a little bit about the project or reach out to somebody involved, you know, whether it's just a small period of life where you've increased your training volume or you're getting more involved in sport. And you just feel like things aren't quite right. One of the obvious signs, obviously, as a female athlete is the amenorrhea. So, you know, that can be perhaps quite a telling indicator. But as a male athlete, you know, perhaps the signs are a little bit less obvious. So that's where I think, you know, we would like to try and provide a place for people to come. And you can opt for, you know, seeing dietitians and nutritionists and seeking medical advice. Or my role as a mentor is to share my experiences and see if I can create a level ground, which can a lot of the time be a massive first step for people.
I understand all that, and those are all really good suggestions there. But I'm thinking, you know, the worst person to ask about if they've got a drinking problem is an alcoholic, right? Because they'll say, oh, there's nothing wrong. Yeah, I'm fine. You know, there's lots of people who drink more than me. I'm not an alcoholic. But you or I might notice that there's a problem. And so if raising that subject with somebody has got a goal and says, you know, I need to be a lightweight, I need to lose weight, I need to watch what I'm eating in order to further my sporting ambitions. And I've heard those, you know, those arguments. I've had them thrown back at me when I've tried to raise something as a coach. You know, or if you're a parent, challenging a 15-year-old that's not wanting the food because they're influenced by the media and friends at school and they want to be a runner or a cyclist, where would you go? I mean, obviously, for parents, probably start with Red S, but then what professional help can you seek? You know, it's difficult enough to get to see a GP if they have any knowledge about this sort of thing now. So, you know, and if kids get angry when you, or a partner gets angry when you raise this issue with them, then a lot of people would just stop at that obstacle.
Yeah, I think there's not a simple answer to the question. It's a massive challenge. You know, a lot of people's kind of immediate thoughts is to go to a GP, but I actually never went to a GP because I think a lot of GPs don't have knowledge on this and they would end up kind of misdiagnosing, or you know, perhaps you would just end up wasting your time because they're going to give you an explanation that doesn't really answer the question. I think if you're a parent or a friend of someone who might be suffering, it's a real challenge. I think you would have to try your best to create a level ground, whether it's, you know, talking about your own experiences and trying to create a space for them to invest in it. And perhaps like, yeah, you know, I felt like that once myself. And then, you know, a lot of the problems are deeply, deeply rooted. So it's how much can you unwind these issues? You know, ideally the goal of Project Red S is to be the platform to allow people to, you know, help them towards that. And my goal for 2024 is to do more talks and presentations within establishments, so within universities, within running stores, within spaces that would be quite interested in this topic. Mm-hmm. Because it sounds strange to say, but I find the topic fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
You know, I was a sufferer myself, but part of the reason why I wanted to get involved into the project is to help out with you know, the cause and how can we further explore it.
I think you made a good point a few moments ago about education is the, you know, a key part of this. We've got a lot of ground to make up in terms of reversing those media messages and inbuilt beliefs that have been around for a long time. You know, my, probably like yours will be, and I certainly know this is the case from Pippa, my first encouragement as a coach would be, if you feel like there's something wrong with somebody that's a loved one or a friend, is to at least get educated yourself and yeah. And then try to find a strategy. And it'll be different for different people, but getting educated yourself about these things, and so at least you can spot the signs and the behavioural patterns and things that might help.
Yeah, I think you know, if you just do a little bit of self education and read about the topic, it becomes very obvious about how debilitating it is. The problem for me is, so when I see like a, whether it's an article or a presentation related to Red S, and there will always be a slide related to signs and symptoms. When you read that as someone who hasn't suffered, it's, you know, a lot of it is scientific words. You know, it's psychological, it's hormonal, it's cardiovascular, it's the muscular system. And you read all that, and perhaps you are quite alarmed at how many different areas it could affect. But I guess, you know, I can speak for myself how true this all is. And it really is a kind of downward cascade of effect on your health. And I think in some scenarios, if there isn't an intervention, it could just continue to get worse and worse. You know, your heart is a muscle. All of these things will be affected, and if it's affected chronically over many, many years, you know, the consequences could be quite severe.
To the point where, as we probably started off this conversation, you know, doing the things you love might actually be restricted from doing the things you love if your health has deteriorated to the point where you just don't have the energy or the stability or the muscular strength to run, play rugby, ride your bike.
Yeah, I think it's a sad thought to think of it like that. But to put a positive spin on it, you know, for me, as someone who has recovered, I've took a big interest in strength and conditioning for running. Mm-hmm. So that's been a massive key part for me to build muscle capacity, build strength and endurance through the means of through weightlifting. You know, a lot of people kind of are aware that they should be doing stuff like this, but they just kind of push it to one side. And you know, getting in the gym, lifting kind of relatively heavy, making a bit of a routine of building a stronger body, that has changed my love for the sport even more, because, you know, you feel healthier, you feel more conditioned, it makes you feel more sustainable, and it ties in with a kind of healthier, happier motive. So I do think there is, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. There is certainly ways of recovering, tweaking your lifestyle, changing big elements and introducing factors that you perhaps weren't aware that could be so important, and all of this can add up together to you know, make you a healthier athlete.
It seems to me, and I think we're both on the same page here, Alex, that our message, certainly mine, will be, if you have a healthy, rounded approach to life, that's almost always going to lead to a much better outcome if you're interested in performance as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you can find those spaces in the day to take some extra rest. A lot of people forget sitting on the sofa with your feet up, you know, you're allowing your body to repair, you're allowing your body to recover. Mm-hmm. If you have a busy job, if you have a busy lifestyle, and you feel like, you know, eating a little bit extra that day, or, you know, having a few extra snacks, like, you should be encouraged to do so. I always remember, I think Matthew McConaughey says in a podcast, he mentions he finds that the happiest times in his life are times where he doesn't ask himself for permission. And I think that ties in with fueling, and fueling in sport is, you know, if you feel like you need a little bit extra fuel that day, and if you, you know, you want to go out and go for a lovely meal and enjoy some time with family, is most of us aren't competing at the highest level of competition. So we should be able to do that. If you strip your sport away, you know, life should be about enjoyment, and sport can definitely work together with that as well.
I think that's a fantastic summary, Alex. I really appreciate you sharing your experiences and your wisdom with folks today. It's been a great conversation, and I hope that some of the listeners appreciate that, find time to go and educate themselves about Red S, and slowly we can spread this message between us so that people just out there are a little bit more aware of what's happened to themselves or to other people around them.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks very much for having me on. Like I've mentioned throughout, if anyone wants to reach out to Project Red S, you can do so online. Whether or not you just want to kind of contact anyone at the project, me myself, I've became a mentor for the project. So whether it's kind of one-to-one meetings with myself to discuss the kind of problems that you've encountered, even if you're not quite sure if you have been suffering, but you have a feeling that you might have, this is all relevant as well. So that could be really important to raise more awareness and obviously start your kind of recovery journey as well.
Great. Alex, thank you so much for being here. Best wishes with your football academy and your strength and conditioning and everything. And maybe we'll have you back on the show at another time to sort of talk about some more specific matters around nutrition and running.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks very much, Simon. Cheers.
Thank you again to Alex for being my guest on the show this week. This is a really important topic for all of us athletes, coaches, and just family and friends. Red S can affect anyone. And if you think there may be someone in your circle of friends that is suffering, please make sure to check out the show notes for links on where to educate yourself and, more importantly, how to find help for them. To make sure that you don't miss any of our future episodes, please go to iTunes, search for High Performance Human Triathlon Podcast, and then click on the subscribe button. And once you've finished listening to this episode, if you could share it with just one person you think would benefit, then that would be absolutely awesome. And if you've got a couple more minutes, maybe you could leave me a review on your chosen platform. And please do check out those show notes for links to all of the items I've mentioned above, and especially the ones pointing you to the Red S Project. That's all for this week. I'll have another great guest in 7 days, and I hope that you'll be able to join me then. For now, enjoy your training and enjoy the rest of your week.